The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Today is the 30th anniversary of the Cork double being completed in 1990. The hurlers obviously won a fortnight ago, 30 years ago, and the footballers won officially today, 30 years ago. So Cork GAA and Merrimount Hospice are calling on Cork people to go red for Cork. It's the 16th of September, marking the 30th anniversary, as I said, of the GAA double being done for the last time in 1990. It's to drive awareness of an outstanding athletic achievement for the county. The initiative, which was the brainchild of current Cork GAA hurler Conor Callaghan, whose father Niall was on the winning 1990 team football, is going to raise much-needed charitable funds for Merrimount Hospice. To get involved, the people of Cork are being asked to go red today, to wear your jersey or red clothing or accessorise or red up your remote office or your home or your car, and then please to donate to the campaign through the online campaign link, which is on idonate.ie, and it's /goredforcork. And I'm delighted to say we've got Larry Tompkins with us this morning, and we'll hear from Ger Fitzgerald in a couple of minutes. Larry, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
It's been a week of reminiscing about 1990. How has that been for you? It must seem like the blink of an eye.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. It's 30 years. It's gone so fast, but the memories are still there. Fantastic. Just a fantastic day, and just fantastic, I suppose, year for Cork, like, to win the double. Like, the hurlers winning two weeks before that, and then the footballers to do it. I think, you know, the scenes I can... when we come back down on the Monday night, you know, those type of scenes, I don't think... We'd love to see them again, but, you know, it was incredible that night. And, there was 100,000 people, I say, around Cork City that night. And it was just a magic, magic feeling. And honoured to have captain a great county to have won the Hall Ireland.
You didn't know it at the time, but that was kind of the end of the great Cork-Meath rivalry. At that stage, after you made it 2-2, it was clearly the two best teams in the country fighting it out after a long period of time where you'd really been at each other's throats, literally and metaphorically, for the previous 4 years.
Yeah, like, look, people ask the question and still ask the question, was the hurlers put any more pressure on us going for the double? But that wasn't the case because, as you mentioned there, we just had massive rivalry against Meath over a long period of time. There were the two giants of football, and Meath had come out the upper hand on us in 87 and 88 after a replay. 88, probably a match where, you know, we felt we should have won it. We didn't. And then in 1990, in a league semi-final on Easter Sunday, Meath beat us again. So, look, our focus and complete focus was to try and beat Meath. And we were delighted, believe it or not, to see Meath in an All-Ireland final because, as a team, we needed to prove ourselves. And if we didn't beat Meath on that day, like, probably our previous All-Ireland final victory against Mayo would have been certainly diminished as regards the team. So our complete focus that day was Meath, and we wanted them so much to try and just prove ourselves. That was the main thing.
The other thing is, Larry, the other thing is that automatically makes you a great team. You know, you were already a great team, almost irrespective of that, because you'd been to All-Ireland finals. You'd killed off the greatest Kerry team of all time. But there wouldn't have been enough credit. There wouldn't have been enough kind of, your place in history wouldn't have been assured if you didn't actually beat Meath that day.
No, and like, look, we would have accepted that. Like, it's look, when the top teams come along, and for a long number of years here, the battle was to try and beat Kerry here in the Munster Championship. But we had that, and we had them. We were dominant against Kerry. So, like, our next challenge was Meath. Like, and look, you know, if you want to be seriously All-Ireland contenders and winners, like, you need to beat the best that's out there. And at that time, Meath were the best. And, we certainly would have come away from that if we didn't get victory and unable to beat them. You know, the question mark would have been always there. Like, you were okay, you won your All-Ireland, but, you know, you didn't beat Meath. And that would have been hanging over us. So, look, it was a very, very important game for us to win. And... you know, I think that the focus of our team on the day was 1,000%, and I think overall, I think, you know, there was a lot of hatred at the time and ferocious battles against Meath. You know, I would have played against Meath like in my Kildare days, back when I was, myself and Shea with Bahi were the same when we were 16 years of age. So I grew up with all the Meath fellas, and I knew how good they were. So, like, look, it was just a crowning moment for that Cork team because they really deserved it, because They were an outstanding team, and thanks for the God like that. At the end of the day, both teams got two All-Irelands each. I suppose it's a fair call on both sides in relation to their dominance over that period of time.
Larry, you mentioned hatred there. I actually watched the game back recently enough. We did a piece on it and off the ball on the 1990 All-Ireland final. Was it really hatred? Because when you watched the game back, I think one of the lines that was said after we watched the game was that there was a couple of tackles that wouldn't be allowed in rugby nowadays. Is that what it was like when you were out there, when you're playing against the likes of Gerry McAtee and Liam Hayes in midfield? Was it hatred on the pitch?
Look, it was. Those guys were good mates of mine, like, and you know, Meade, you have to give them, like, Meade play the game, like, when they go between the White Lions, it's war, like, and you know, they were a hell of a team, like, they had massive players, like, they had a forward line as good as any has emerged, like, in football. And, like, all throughout the field, they were strong, they were physical, and by God, they could play football. So, like, I suppose when you meet a team so many times, and the clashes are so intense, and it was intense at halftime, it was intense after the match with the followers, it was just, I suppose, a lot of tension there. And I suppose that's what makes the game, like, you know, people talk about, like, you know, the rivalry with clubs and the neighbouring clubs, like, it's similar to clashes that you have against county teams maybe on a frequent basis. And that's the way we were with Meath. Like, and I suppose for a good number of years, we felt 87 Meath were the better team. 88, we felt we were the better team and we didn't get over the line. That 1990 semi-final in the league turned out a nasty affair. It was an Easter Sunday. It was just probably what we needed to drive it on further to try and beat them in the All-Ireland final in September. And look, that's what happens in sport, and probably that's the making of any sport, is that intense great rivalry. And I suppose both teams now, like, are very friendly with another, and I suppose that was culminated a lot in relation to the passing of John Cairns here when he passed away, and we had an enormous amount of Meath players come down for that funeral.
Just on John, there's a moment in the game, and I don't know what, when you look back in it, what you think, what clicked for Cork that day, but John made a save in the second half that day, and hands up, I'm a Meath man, Larry, so I probably feel like Meath let that one slip away that day. But is there a moment in that game, or is there somebody in particular that you, when you look back as captain, you're like, that's the man, that's the reason we won that All-Ireland final? Dave Barry obviously had a great game. Shea Fahey had a great game, but is there something that in your head you go, 30 years on, that's why we did it?
And of course there's moments, like, and I think that, I suppose for Cork, like, that day, it was a low-scoring game, but every ball was contested, like, with a 100%, 1,000%. The clashes were intense all over the field, like Colm O'Neill early on got sent off after 26 minutes. You know, he was certainly well on top of McLyons. He was having the game of his life, Colm. But of course, Shea Fahey had one of those games, like, that you'd dream of, like, scored 4 points and played from midfield. And our backs were superb, like, when the chips were really down. And Meath were always, you know, that last 10 minutes, like, in a game, like, Meath really came at you really with force, like, and they were like a, you know, an army coming at you in waves, like, and of course our backs held out tremendously well. And you mentioned the save with John Cairns. Of course, it was a critical stage of the game. I think it was only less than 10 minutes to go. I'd say it was about maybe 6 or 7 minutes to go. And he smothered a shot on Brian Stafford. At that crucial stage, because a goal in the game, like, would have probably been the difference of a team winning it or losing it. So, yeah, there was massive clashes all over the field that day, and just the intensity was incredible. And even though it was a low-scoring game, there was plenty of entertainment.
Larry, when did you do your cruciate?
Yeah, it was about 15 minutes ago. I'd say it was a clash with Martin O'Connell, you know, totally accidental. Both was coming. I suppose both was coming head on to get the ball. He just got there that bit quicker than me, and I suppose I went in kind of with my right leg, and unfortunately my knee decided to go another way, and I felt it was in serious trouble, but I bounced up off the ground and tried to just get on with it. And as I said, it was just probably the adrenaline and the motivation, and I suppose that we needed to beat Meade, and that was in my head all the way through, you know.
And did you have to kick a free after that?
I kicked 2 points afterwards, yeah, from Frisia. So, Yeah, the lad said they were too easy for you, didn't he? I wasn't too bad.
My recollection is that one of them was from the 40, no?
Well, I don't think it was out that far, but I'll take that if you've given it to me.
Right, yeah, no, totally. And when did you get diagnosed? So it was a partial tear of the ACL?
Yeah, I really done severe damage. I actually severed the cruciate ligament and my medial ligament, both of them gone. So I was in a fair bad state, like in, you know, going up to receive the cup. I remember like being kind of helped up along the way. And then majorly then that time when the coach kind of came in on the field, I couldn't come back down onto the field. So the guards and the security brought me down the back exit and into the dressing room. And funnily enough, I've been captain, which probably captain nearly always ends up nearly being last in the dressing room normally when the crowd is on the field. But it's funny, I ended up in the dressing room nearly first. And who was in there before me? Only Teddy McCarthy had raced in. Probably Teddy doesn't like hearing the speeches, so he left early and went into the dressing room. And of course, the icon of Cork and really respected man, Jack Lynch, was there. So it was a brilliant moment there with the three of us. Like, we were just there in the dressing room. But yeah, I was lucky because Dr. Con Murphy kind of straight away wrapped me up in a kind of a heavy bandage, and it kind of, you know, was able to stabilise. I was able to get around it a little bit better. But unfortunately, then I ended up in Tralee General Hospital on Wednesday and was there for nearly 3 weeks.
Right. Jesus, so, I didn't realise it was so bad that the tear had been so significant.
Yeah. So, yeah, look, I suppose Meade kept me going. You know, we just, I think the team was so motivated that they had to win that it didn't matter what happened anywhere, you know.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal story. We also have Ger Fitzgerald with us from the Hurlers. Ger, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. How are you keeping?
I'm very well. How are you getting on?
Very good. Very good, thank you.
We've just been strolling down memory lane with Larry Tompkins there. It must have been an interesting couple of weeks for you in the build-up to this as well, 30-year anniversary. A remarkable achievement when you think about it, the fact that no one's done it since and no one's really been, I mean, Galway had an opportunity for it, but no one's really been within a hair's breadth of it since.
Oh, absolutely remarkable opportunity. And it's, I suppose, in the modern game now, it's very, very, very difficult for players to play like Teddy did on both teams, but also for counties to be successful in both codes is very, very serious. And there's not too many competing at the top table on both codes anymore.
What's your recollection of the actual day itself?
The hurling day was, I suppose we'd been experienced in the build up from 1986. A lot of us had the core of that team had been around, so we were familiar with the drill. There was a bit of tension around All Ireland final day, as you'd normally expect. But I think overall the team was very relaxed. We were pretty confident in our own ability. We had played very well against Galway a couple of years earlier and haven't beaten Tipperary in the Munster final. There was enormous confidence running through the team. And the Cannon and John McCarthy had us physically and mentally in a very good state facing into the match.
What was John McCarthy's role?
Well, he was officially the team trainer, but basically he was a tactician and he was the sounding board for the Cannon. He had a massive role, really, and I think he reinforced the Cannon's beliefs all through the year in terms of when the Cannon would come up with an idea. The first man he'd bounce it off would be Gerald, and then Gerald would sort of sell it to the team. But Gerald had a huge role in terms of background work and physical work, and we were a very, very good physical condition going into that final.
Okay, so it was definitely a management duo, because I don't know if many people outside the county would have been familiar with the Cannon in advance of that year. Certainly, you know, we had quite high profile managers of both Tipperary and Galway at the time in Babs and Cyril, and they would have been the great rivalry. And, you know, I don't remember who the Cork manager was up until that point, and then all of a sudden the Cannon sneaks in and takes one, as somebody said, in one of those great Laker Gales.
Yeah, well, he'd been involved with Cork in 1984 and 85, so he had been around it. He had Justin McCarthy with him. But he came in again in 1990, and he had Gerald as his support act, really, and the physical trainer in an official capacity. But I think he gave him a lot of support. But Cannon had a serious experience with UCC, and he was a great man to work one-to-one with players, working their minds, working on their sort of approach to things. And he was a little bit of a joker as well. He took a little bit of tension out of the atmosphere. And he was a great man in the dressing room.
What's the scene at halftime? Because whatever about your confidence pre-match, the first 35 minutes is one of the greatest exhibitions of hurling we've ever seen from Joe Cooney. Like, absolutely sensational, godlike, kind of, you know, the greatest Michael Jordan-style performance. And Galway hurled themselves out, it turns out, in retrospect, and you guys came into the game in the second half. But certainly at half time, it's like, whoa, that guy out there is unstoppable.
Well, we had a decent enough start, and then they sort of took control. But the wind had an enormous effect on that game. I suppose it was more evident in the second half, in our experience. But Joe Cody was on fire. But at the same time, I didn't feel we were hurling, or we didn't feel we were hurling that bad, and the wind was going to have an enormous effect. Obviously, there was a little bit of a G up and a bit of tension and a few harsh words spoken at halftime, but there wasn't overall panic. I think we had confidence in our own ability. We had, after all, beaten Tipperary in the Munster final, which was really a great monkey to get off our backs. And we were pretty confident. And we had, in 1986, turned Galway over in sort of similar circumstances, playing in the same direction. So I think once we got out in the second half, we got stuck into the match. And Jim Cashman, to his eternal credit, settled down and had a tremendous second half. And also, I think it was a reflection of the management's confidence that they didn't move Jim off of a Joe Cooney. That was a very significant move at halftime, and there was talk about it, but it was decided not to do it. And I think that was a significant moment in that we kept our shape and we kept our positions. And in the second half, the wind had a significant impact in where Joe Cunningham's puck outs were landing. And the key thing about that then was that the famed, we'll say, Galway half back line were great men facing the ball, but when you turned them and made them run at their own goals, that was their Achilles heel, really. And we felt that if we could get them turning, we could get the scores. And I suppose another significant factor in that forward line, five of the six forwards there, Tony Sullivan won't thank me, but he wouldn't have been a noted goal scorer. But the other five of those six forwards were all noted goal scorers and well able to put the ball away when they got opportunities.
And so you did. Five goals was the winning of the game.
Five goals and probably missed two or three more, so that was significant, I think.
It is an all-time classic. It probably needs to be excavated and put on TG Carr a bit more often, but it is an all-time classic All-Ireland final. Does it help when you're remembering those games that it is? Like, I'm sure it doesn't matter if you'd won a scratchy game, a point to no score, but actually, you know, when you're telling the stories, it's like, this. By the way, everybody, this was an all-time classic, just so you're aware.
Yeah, I suppose it helps with the nostalgia, and it was brilliant over the lockdown when people were very restricted in where they could go, and the games were on TV. There was a great bit of banter around home, bit of banter around the clubs, and bit of banter between the lads on the team having a bit of crack on it. I didn't realise you were that good or that bad, you know. It was pretty interesting, all right. But it goes down as a classic, but really, when you win in All-Ireland, 1 point or 20 points wouldn't matter. The key there is the result. It's all about the winning. Nobody thinks of the losers, really, after that. It's a brutal experience. We've won them and we've lost them. But when you certainly win them, it wouldn't matter whether you won by 20 points or 1 point. The significance of it is still the same. The fact that it's a classic is excellent. And I suppose the fact that it's been used this today now to fundraise for Marymount, which is a tremendous cause for Cork and a huge institution. It's all right in Cork and a massive service to people who are very sick when they need to go to Marymount. So it's a huge occasion and a very proud thing for us to be associated with.
Ger, when you think back on the start in 1990, obviously the footballers were reigning All-Ireland champions. How far did the hurlers come from? Were you in the mix that year? Did you?
In 1989, there was a lot of upheaval. There was a lot of changes in the panel. Three or four of us hadn't played in the championship, haven't been involved in the league. The footballers had a very successful setup going, and I suppose we were looking on in envy, really, having previously had a good run ourselves in 86. We thought we should be still up there, but Tipperary were dominating, and we had management changes at the start of 1989. Or at the end of 1989, coming into the 1990 season, and we worked very hard in the league. We had a very successful league campaign, albeit it ended pretty hairy in Wexford Park on Easter Monday. I think we were beaten by Wexford in a poor display. Five of those lads who played that forward line played in the All-Ireland final. So we were in a pretty good place physically, and we knew we could hurl. We knew we had a decent enough team. The Munster Championship was tricky for us. We had a hairy start against Kerry. We had a few injuries going into that match. We built up momentum as we went. I think a very significant victory for us was the game against Waterford and Thurles. Previously, Waterford had beaten Cork in 89 after a replay. And we put in a very good display that day. We were missing Teddy Tomás and Tony Sullivan in that match. So a lot of lads who came in from sort of minor and under 21 from 85, 86, 88 under 21s gelled in with the more senior lads from 86. And we formed a very, very formidable team as the season developed.
Okay. Chair, do you have a question?
Yeah, Larry, I wanted to ask you about what it was like being a superstar in Cork in 1990, because there was there was a young lad shooting the lights out for Nottingham Forest at that stage, on the verge of his move to Manchester United, who I understand was in picking your brains from time to time.
I was trying to learn a bit from him. But I've met great people over a long period of time, and you know, the GA is fantastic. Like, and you know, I was here one night, just giving an example with Roy Keane, and you know, I was saying to him, geez, this is, I suppose, only 6 months ago, and I just said, look, Roy, I said, you've won everything in the game, geez, you couldn't have asked for better. And Jared laughed at this. He just turned around to me and said, I didn't win an All-Ireland hurling. So he was just making the comparison, like, that you're not really accepted in Cork unless you win an All-Ireland hurling title. So I still have that one to go as well. But look, the most important thing for us, and Jared said the same, we were the lucky ones when you're out there and get the opportunity to play for your county, and Cork is so special. Like, it's just a brilliant place, and to produce so many sports people in all walks of life, and just to get the honour to go out there and represent your county and try and do your best. Like, there's loads of people that just can't do it. They're just, you know, whether they just didn't make the county scene, and they missed out, or they would love to be there. And of course, then, you know, Jared's talked about the people then that's probably just unwell, and just things that happened to them over the years. And that's why it's a magic day today in relation to Go Red today. And look, we're all in some way touched by the magnificent walk that Marymount do outside there. And look, I just want to say to everybody, try and just contribute something, and it would be just a massive help to the charity. And just go red today, and just dig deep, and you'll certainly feel good about yourself.
Lads, great stuff. Ger Fitzgerald and Larry Tompkins, thanks very much for joining us. They're great stories from 1990. And again, the place to donate is idonate.ie/GoRedForCork, and this is to raise funds for Marymount Hospice. It's the brainchild of current Cork GAA hurler Conor Cahalan, whose dad Niall obviously was famously part of that 1990 football team. A man mountain himself, a worthy teammate of Larry Tompkins, and a worthy adversary for that great Meath team.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.